Let's decide it,
said Tedros, turning to his colleagues. I will ride to meet this lion, and the rest of you will remain at Camelot to prepare for war. My stewards will show you to your rooms. Summit dismissed.
The leaders dispersed, giving both the king and his mother small nods as they left. Tedros tucked the lion's sparrow messenger into his pocket and sewed up the holes in the floating maps with his finger glow before he glanced up and saw that the room had emptied, save for his mother and Lancelot, embracing in the corner. Tedros came up behind them.
Thank you for helping me, both of you. When it came to protecting the kingdom, I know how much my father trusted you as his knight, Sir Lancelot. It's time I did the same. You are now my knight, too.
Lancelot met the young king's gaze.
We ride tonight, Your Highness.
Guinevere lifted her head from Lancelot's arms, her eyes red and scared, looking between her son and her true love.
Bring him back safe, she said.
Tedros didn't know who she was talking about, and he didn't ask. Tedros blew gently on the black ink until it was dry. He'd rewritten the scroll a few times to make sure his handwriting looked especially regal. Sherwood Forest tomorrow, 6 p.m. at Marion's Arrow. Password is Little John. King Tedros of Camelot. A cool breeze sifted into his bedroom through the open balcony door. Tedros rolled up the parchment, stamped a wax seal of Camelot's crest, and tucked the message into the sparrow's feet. He fed the tiny courier a scrap of toast, and, leaning out the balcony, he sent it flying into the violet evening. Sherwood Forest was the only possible place to meet this so-called lion. For one thing, it was less than a day's ride from Camelot, but more importantly, the forest was a secure stronghold guarded by Robin Hood and his merry men, its roots so dense that the snake or his minions couldn't possibly attack there. Luckily, Tedros's father had a long-standing alliance with Robin Hood, so the king and the lion could convene safely and privately at Marion's Arrow, where the door was password-protected and where everyone knew the only rule of the pub, what happens inside stays inside. Standing at the balcony, Tedros watched the twilight cast shadows on the pool garden. King Arthur hadn't wanted his bedroom smelling of flowers, so he'd had the royal gardens ripped up and replaced with a landscape of reflecting pools, some small, some big, in a variety of shapes, with a maze of paths swirling around them. Tedros could remember running about as a boy in wet shorts, hopping in and out of pools, chasing his mother, who was always one step ahead of him. The king took a deep breath, his first after the fever of the day. When the unexpected summit was over, he'd managed a quick bath and wolfed down a dinner of steak, broccoli and sweet potatoes, pounding down double portions so he'd be ready for the ride to come. His stewards were preparing the horses with Lancelot and packing bags of provisions. Agatha's maids, who'd been acting like headless chickens, without Lady Gremlaine or Agatha to direct them, were put to work cleaning swords. Tedros was about to close his balcony door when he noticed a shadow sitting out on the stone bench by the biggest reflecting pool. He stepped out on the terrace and walked down the steps, passing a guard stationed at the entrance. In the dark, he could hardly see the thin path around the pools.
Hello, he said, coming up behind the shadow.
His mother smiled up at him, barefoot on the bench.
When are you leaving?
she asked.
Soon,
said Tedros, sitting beside her. Did you...
eat? Believe it or not, if you don't worry about me eating, I will still do it. And in sufficient quantities over the past 6 months to make the cooks despise me as much as the guards do, which is... a lot.
His mother sighed. They weren't especially fond of you as a child, either.
Thanks, Mother, said Tedros.
They both looked at each other and cracked up. Slowly, their laughter trailed off. I wish I'd been here instead of hiding with Merlin and Lance these past months, said Guinevere. The reason I came back to Camelot in the first place was to stop hiding after all these years, to help you be king. I can't imagine how hard it's been for you.
I've gotten used to not having parents, to be honest, Tedros said.
His mother sat quietly, watching the wind sweep across the pools.
When I'm gone, keep your eye on the guards, said Tedros. No one can find Kay, the guard who locked me in. The other guards say they've never even heard of anyone by that name. But I don't know what's truth and lies anymore. Nor do I know who to trust. If anyone tries to kill you for the bounty, you'll have nobody to help you.
The price on my head is the furthest thing from my mind right now, his mother said, dipping her foot in the pool. But I've learned my lessons about trust. When I was queen, I snuck out of the castle every night for months to see Lance. I had to figure out which guards would keep my secret. In the end, I chose the wrong one. That's how your father found out. Tedros glanced at her, surprised. It was the first time she'd ever talked so honestly about deceiving his father. Sometimes I worry about whether you know who to trust, though, said Guinevere. You seem to have grown close to Lady Gremlane while I was gone. Tedros flinched. She was talking about that moment in the Hall of Kings when she, Merlin, and Dovey had returned. His mother's first image of her son after 6 months of being away was seeing him coddled by a woman she hated. I was surprised she was still in the castle, said Guinevere briskly. I thought you were going to fire her after the coronation.
I needed her, Mother, said Tedros, heating up. The people were revolting. There was a bounty on your head. The kingdom was falling apart. I needed someone who the people had faith in, someone who could help me. No one was here, and
Agatha was here for you. That wasn't enough, said his mother.
I was trying to protect her from all that. It's why I kept Lady Gremlane in the castle, said Tedros defensively. When you were queen, you ran away with Lance and hid from the world. You abandoned your responsibilities for love. But I have to balance my responsibilities with love. That's what makes me different from you. Because what Agatha and I have, it isn't a mockery like whatever you had with Dad.
Guinevere exhaled as if he'd socked her in the chest. It wasn't a mockery, she said.
It wasn't love. Let's agree on that, said Tedros. If it were love, I wouldn't have spent my whole life trying to figure out what love is. I wouldn't wake up every day desperate to keep it now that I've found it. You can't fathom how alone I felt, knowing my mother's true love wasn't my father. And every day I'm not with Agatha, that loneliness comes back. Because she's the only person who has ever fought for me when I'm down. Everyone else just runs, you included.
His mother said nothing.
If it makes you feel better, you will write about Gremlane,
Tedros mumbled. Pretty sure she was conspiring with the advisors the whole time.
I doubt that, his mother said softly, almost to herself. As little as I care for Lady Gremlane, she cared for the Mistral sisters even less. If I hadn't fired her back when I was queen, she would have made sure Arthur never brought them into the castle. So we all paid a price for our mistakes in the end. Tedros frowned. The plot he'd worked out in his head between Lady Gremlane and those three hags suddenly growing fuzzy.
Do you know where she lives?
He asked.
Lady Gremlane?
Guinevere paused. No. It was pitch dark now, save the torchlight coming from the windows of the castle behind them. Tedros could hardly see his mother's face any more. Did the Mistrals tell you anything? About what they did with the money? His mother asked.
No. They hid it somewhere, though, that's for sure.
Tedros hesitated, picking at his nails.
They did say you know more than you're letting on, that you're playing dumb.
His mother pulled her toes out of the pool and slipped both feet back into her slippers, about to leave. Tedros grabbed her shoulder.
Why did you fire Lady Gremlane? Please, I need to know.
Guinevere's shadow was very still. Finally she slackened, as if there was no running from this any more. She grew too close to your father, Tedros. This was before you were born. Gremlane had always been in love with him, the whole kingdom knew that. So when he came back from school with me on his arm, she absolutely loathed me. To the point that I never drank from any glass she offered, fearing it was poisoned. Tedros's eyes bulged.
She was in love with him. Before I was born. But then that means...
No, she did not have his child, Tedros, said Guinevere testily, pulling away. That's why I didn't want to talk about this, because I knew you'd jump to conclusions. Do you really think I'd keep that secret from you? If I knew you had an elder brother? If I knew you weren't the rightful king, your father would have told me. Arthur had his faults, but he was not a liar, and he was not a cheat. Which is more than you might say about me. But this is the truth. You are king. No matter what any snake says. Tedros looked down, his crown sinking deeper on his head. It's time you knew the whole story, Guinevere continued. I told Arthur to fire Gremlane, but he wouldn't. Not that I was worried about Arthur betraying me. He was too honest a man and too in love with me to ever do anything like that. It's why I know the snake is lying. Still, I didn't want to watch Lady Gremlane continue fawning over him so openly. It was infuriating for one thing, and for another, people were starting to talk. So I had her moved to the White Tower early in my reign, so we would see as little of her as possible. Our paths rarely crossed that year you were born. Even with her out of sight, though, I could feel her lurking, always insinuating herself between your father and I. After you were born, I finally convinced Arthur to let me fire her. It wasn't easy. His mother was still talking, but Tedros felt that slimy feeling in his throat again.
There's a strange guest room in the White Tower, he said, interrupting her. It connects to Lady Grimlane's old room.
I'm aware, said Guinevere, anticipating him. Your father had it built right after you were born, to house a blind seer who painted your coronation portrait and wanted privacy during the week he was painting it.
It adjoined to Lady Grimlane's in case the seer needed her assistance. His mother paused. Even so, there was something about that room I never liked. When the seer left, I made your father give me the only key to it. It's why you have the key on your ring instead of Lady Grimlane. All of this means that your father never could have used that room while we were married, Tedros. So whatever theories you've conjured in your head, you can let go.
Then how did she get in that day?
Tedros asked. Guinevere's shadow straightened. Who?
Lady Grimlane. I was trying to hide from the guards. I locked the door to that room, but somehow she got in. She pretended I hadn't locked it, but I know I did. She had a key. She had to have had a key.
Slowly, Guinevere turned towards the castle, lit by its faint glow, the tightness in her face returning. Tedros stared at her.
Mother, where does Lady Grimlane live?
Guinevere shook her head. Nottingham. Tedros, stop. Nothing happened. You're confusing lies with truth, she said, turning to him. Focus on finding... But her son was already gone, leaping between pools as he ran, like he'd done all those years ago, as a child. Only this time, he left his mother behind. Chapter 22 Agatha The Mysteries of a Name. Here comes the Prude Brigade, Sophie groaned, fresh-faced and glowy in a blue and gold kaftan, her giant hoop earrings shimmering in the afternoon sun. Just because he kissed me doesn't mean I have the faintest clue who he is. Because really, who needs to know who they're kissing? Agatha snapped next to her. Girls, let's focus on what's important. Professor Dovey frowned, her face magnified inside the bubble over the dining table, wobbling from the ship's bumpy course. The snake is still at large, and coming for Camelot. Is it my fault your dear Teddy didn't show up to save us? Sophie puffed in Agatha's direction. Is it my fault your king is derelict in his duties? Don't blame me for being swept off my feet by a hero who actually knows how to do his job. We don't even know who he is. You don't even know his name, Agatha blared. Does knowing Tedros's name make him any more competent or useful? No, it doesn't, Sophie said, inhaling her rose luxuriously. Say what you want about your lion, but this lion adores me, shows up on time, and smells like a red-blooded man. Right, because your nose for men is so reliable, Agatha barked. Keep your voices down, Professor Dovey said. The last thing we need is word getting out that while the woods is crumbling and a villain is on the loose, a dean of our school is kissing nameless boys. Less a prude brigade and more a prude police, Sophie murmured. Agatha subtly turned her head towards the galley. With all the new questers rescued onto the Igraine after the four-point battle, the ship's interior was chock-full. Luckily, no one was listening to her and Sophie. Beatrix and Rena were sniffling and writing letters of condolence to Millicent's relatives, while Dot was at the window whispering to Agatha's courier Crow, which had Camelot's official ring around its neck. Hester and Anadil were tending to Kiko's burns, Vex's mangled ear, and 10 other injured questers in a makeshift hospital. Bandaged up Hort was barking at the enchanted pot, to make him a sandwich. It made broccoli instead. Nicola was studying Sophie's quest map. That Sophie had let Nicola borrow it at all was proof their friendship had come a long way. And through the bathroom door, Agatha could see Bogdan and Willem poring over a round of tarot cards on the floor.
Agatha's right. It matters who this boy is, said Professor Dovey. Not just because we need him on our side, but also because we need to know what he wants. I told you. He wants me, said Sophie, still fussing with her rose. A boy doing good deeds to impress an evil dean?
Dovey said.
Good boys love bad girls. Everyone my age knows that.
Sophie bit back.
If he's so good, then why haven't I seen him before?
Dovey hounded.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a boy in possession of a good character must want to come to my school. Yet, despite the fact that I review thousands of applications for prospective evers each year, I've never seen this lion in my life. And I've had a good look at his face.
The dean seemed to move her ball because the field of view turned upside down, veering around Sophie's quarters in the schoolmaster's tower, which the wolves were violently remodeling while Professor Manley supervised. Thankfully, Sophie didn't notice before the crystal ball settled on the Storian's painting of a tan, copper-haired boy kissing Sophie. Dovey turned the crystal ball back on herself.
I had the fairies copy the boy's image, and without giving details, I asked all the teachers and students of both schools if they recognized him. No one has ever seen this boy before. Not a single person. Which, given his accomplishments and skills last night, seems rather impossible. There is something familiar in his face, though. Something I can't quite put my finger on.
She coughed hard, clutching her chest, upending the ball. As it resettled, Agatha noticed the black ridges under Dovey's eyes had grown deeper, her face seemingly older overnight.
Professor, I know you want us to retrieve the rest of the quest teams, said Agatha, but you don't sound well. We can come back to school and help you.
Sophie agreed, suddenly alert.
That's my quest as dean.
No,
your quest is to follow my orders. Besides, I'm fine. Though my crystal ball is running out of time for today, so pay attention.
Dovey insisted, her voice still shaky.
After what's happened with Millicent and Chaddick, I don't want any more students hurt. Find the remaining quest teams immediately. Bring them onto the Igraine, and return them to the school for good and evil, where they'll be safe. Also, I've spoken to Guinevere. More of the snake's attacks have been foiled by the lion in Mahadeva and Foxwood. With the lion on his tail, the snake will surely storm Camelot and try to take it by force. If Camelot falls to the snake, so will all the kingdoms of the woods. Guinevere is working with good and evil leaders to quickly build an army to defend Camelot from the snake and his mercenaries. Tedros, meanwhile, is riding out with Lancelot to meet the lion tonight and find out who he is. If this lion is indeed a loyal ally, he will be a crucial asset in fighting the snake when he and his army assault the castle.
Tedros is riding into the woods, Agatha asked, bolting straighter.
The lion is meeting him,
Sophie asked, perking up.
Where?
The two girls overlapped, then glanced at each other, frowning.
Sherwood Forest,
said Professor Dovey. It's the only safe space near Camelot where the snake can't get to Tedros.
Not so safe anymore, said a voice. Agatha, Sophie, and Dovey raised their heads. Dot held up soggy parchment, stamped with the Sheriff of Nottingham's seal. Since Agatha hasn't been using her courier crow, I sent Daddy a note after the forepoint telling him I was safe. He sent back a letter saying those eely, snaky things were spotted around Nottingham last night. They haven't attacked anyone or done anything bad, but they're slipping in and out of people's houses as if they're searching for someone. If the snake's in Nottingham, that's next to Sherwood Forest, where Tedros and the lion are meeting.
Sophie blinked at her.
You eavesdropped on everything we were saying.
Eavesdropped?
You were yelling,
said Beatrix, looking up.
About the lion, said Annadel.
And the kess,
said Nicola.
And how you don't know his name, said Hort, stone-faced.
Sophie Kith is Rafal, Sophie Kith is Tedros. Now Sophie Kith is Lion with no name, said Kiko. My mother said, kith too many boys and you turn into a snail.
Preach,
said Hester. Sophie pursed her lips. Dovey suddenly looked worried.
Skims, in Nottingham. Girls, there are over a dozen good and evil leaders at the Camelot summit. All of them know Tedros and Lancelot are riding to meet the lion in Sherwood Forest tonight. One of them could be a spy for the snake. If so, the snake might try to attack Tedros in Nottingham before he loses him in the forest.
Dovey cast open her quest map, inspecting it.
Looks like Tedros is already close to the Nottingham border. A message won't reach him in time. And Merlin hasn't answered any of my letters, so I don't even know where he is. If Tedros is ambushed, it'll fall on Lancelot alone to protect him.
She swiveled to the girls.
But your crew has the advantage of numbers. It's our only option. You must find him before he meets the lion and warn him he may have been betrayed.
We'll set our course to Nottingham at once, said Agatha nervously.
We can't let him be attacked,
Dovey pressed.
We'll save the lion like he saved us,
Sophie breathed.
She means Tedros, you idiot, Agatha shot back.
Right, of course,
said Sophie tightly.
Get to Nottingham, girls! Quickly!
Said Dovey, the image of her face starting to fade.
Keep Tedros safe, and bring him to Camelot. You must not fail. My crystal ball resets at midnight, so I'll...
She vanished mid-sentence like a ghost.
Really, that crystal ball is a menace, said Sophie.
Agatha whirled towards her. We need to talk. Sophie was already standing.
We'll do a nice catch-up over tea and those vile chocolate cookies you love, she said, hustling away. But you need to set the ship's course, and Kiko is desperate to speak to me, so it'll have to be another time.
Tedros riding into the woods. Tedros meeting the lion. The snake looking for him. Agatha's heart hammered as she hurried onto the deck and gripped the captain's wheel. She had to get to Tedros before the snake did.
Fly to Nottingham,
Agatha commanded. The ship rocked backwards, knocking her off her feet. She heard screams from the galley as the Igraine pulled out of the sea, the ivory sails catching the wind and launched straight upwards, like a balloon cut from its string, soaring up, 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 until it leveled off surrounded by puffy, sunlit clouds. The Igraine pivoted west as if setting its course and zoomed into the horizon with smooth, comfortable speed. Agatha lumbered off the floor, hearing groans and shouts inside the ship.
"You could have warned us," someone hollered.
"Good job, Captain,"
heckled someone else. Agatha ignored them, watching the Igraine plow out of the cloud tunnel and into open sky. She should go and check on her crew. That was the good thing to do. But her nerves were frayed, her body exhausted, and all she could think about was finding her prince. A sense of déjà vu swept over her, because last night she was sure she'd found her prince. When that masked lion freed her, she'd felt so relieved and protected, back in her true love's arms. But it wasn't her true love, and instead she'd watched the boy she thought was hers kiss Sophie. The shock of the lion pulling off his mask and not being Tedros had left her reeling. Yet instead of being thankful to this so-called lion, or comforted that he'd saved them when Tedros hadn't, Agatha wanted nothing to do with him. Why? Why wasn't she happy that Sophie had found a new romance, and their team a new ally? Why was her blood boiling as if this boy were a villain, instead of a friend? Was it because Sophie was back to her old princessy self, mooning over boys she barely knew? No, that wasn't it. Sophie hadn't sought out this lion, like she'd once sought out a prince. This boy had dropped into their story and kissed her out of the blue. Maybe that's what was irritating her, that some boy would kiss her best friend as his reward for a good deed. No, that wasn't it either. Most Everboys claimed to do good for good's sake, but in the end, let's face it, it was usually to get a girl. No, deep down Agatha knew what was really bothering her. It was that Sophie was right. The lion had done Tedros's job, not just last night, but now the lion was heading off the snake in other kingdoms. He'd swooped in like a hero and beat back the enemy, like she'd tried to. Only unlike her, he'd actually succeeded. He'd been Tedros's champion better than she'd ever be. What would Tedros think of this boy who so effortlessly did what he hadn't done? What she couldn't do either. What Tedros must be thinking, going to meet him. That it's time he act like a king? The voice inside her retorted. But it's too late. No, it's not, Agatha fired back. He is king, and I'll help him prove it. Once she and Tedros were reunited, everything would be fixed. They'd fight the snake at each other's side, just like they'd once fought Rafal. They'd be a team again, stronger together than apart. And as for this lion, well, he could fight with them too. Because having three people in your story always works out well, the voice inside her said. Agatha squashed it. Just get to Tedros, she told herself. Where are we going to land? A voice asked. Nottingham's landlocked. Agatha turned to see Nicola striding purposefully onto the deck, the necklace with Sophie's gold vial dangling off her fingers. We'll figure it out when we get there, said Agatha. Sorry about the takeoff. Everyone okay? Wellum puked again, and we had to put him down for a nap, which he probably needs since he keeps insisting that he can use tarot cards to communicate with the dead. Meanwhile, Bogdan's creepily sidling up to people and asking everyone if they saw the lion's face and whether he's handsome, as if that matters. Think those two had a little too much lemonade at lunch, Rest of the crew is fine, though a bunch of them are too injured from their quests to come ashore in Nottingham. We'll have to leave them on the ship.
But forget all that, said Nicola, breathless. I found something.
She opened the gold vial on the necklace and poured out its contents, forming the magical quest map.
See anything different?
Nicola asked. Agatha peered at the quest map and its fourth-year figurines spread across the kingdoms. At first, her eyes went to Chadwick and Millicent, both crossed out and dripping with blood. Tedros, meanwhile, was streaking out of Camelot and was only a short distance from Nottingham, the gateway into Sherwood Forest. His name was Red, the way it had been since the first time Agatha had seen the map. The names aboard the Igraine were Red too, including Agatha and Sophie, which was no surprise, since the snake was still at large. Agatha's eyes widened.
Hold on, she said. Why aren't these teams red?
She pointed at Gronk's quest team in Mahadeva, Flavia's team in Foxwood.
More of the snake's attacks have been foiled by the lion in Mahadeva and Foxwood.
That's what Dovey had said in the dining room. There was another team turning blue now, before her very eyes. Jacob's group in Pifflepuff Hills, a kingdom west of Mahadeva and Foxwood, a kingdom adjacent to Nottingham.
Look closer, said Nicola.
Agatha saw it and gasped. A figurine separating from Jacob's quest team headed towards Nottingham. A figurine in a lion mask. But that wasn't all. There was a name beneath it. Rian.
His name is...
Rian, Agatha breathed.
That's what you're focused on. His name, said Nicola. Not the fact this lion boy has suddenly appeared on our school's quest map.
Agatha goggled at her, understanding.
But that means he's a student at the school for good and evil. That means he's a fourth year. If there was a fourth year in your class named Rian, wouldn't you know who he is? Wouldn't everyone on this ship?
Nicola asked.
Hort and I asked the whole crew. No one's heard that name before.
But how else could he be on the quest map if he's not a student at the school? Said Agatha.
Well, whoever he is, the Storian recognizes him. Plus, he's fixing students' quests,
said Nicola, watching Rian streak away from Jacob's team, which finished turning blue.
Are you sure you've never heard the name before?
Agatha shook her head, stumped. Rian means nothing to me. Nothing at all.
Well, maybe it'll mean something to his new girlfriend, said Nicola.
Both of them looked towards the galley, hearing love-drunk humming from a cabin below. Agatha thumped on the door.
Pretend to be talking to me,
she heard Sophie whisper inside.
Maybe she'll go away.
But we don't even like each other, Kiko protested.
Shh! Just talk!
About what? Willem was going to read my tarot cards. He said he could communicate with Trifton from beyond, and then you grabbed me and told me you had to show me something in your room.
Tristan, sounds lovely. Tell me about him,
Sophie simpered.
He's dead.
Agatha kicked in the door.
Get out, Kiko.
She kidnapped me.
Kiko peeped, fluttering away. Sophie backed against her bedframe, sheets wrapped protectively around her, the lion's rose in her hair.
I know you're mad he kissed me, Aggie.
Tedros is about to meet this lion, and the snake may be about to kill them both. I'm not mad about kisses. I want answers, said Agatha, occupying the edge of the king-sized bed. She scanned the aggressively masculine chamber with a leopard-skin rug, dark wood finishes, and old maritime relics, which now smelled of sweet lavender and was crammed with Sophie's dresses, beauty creams, and a vast array of shoes. It was supposed to be the captain's quarters, but both Agatha and Sophie knew from the moment they saw it that even if Agatha was captain of this ship, it was Sophie who would be staying here. "Tell me what he said to you," Agatha ordered.
"It's private,"
Sophie snipped.
"Well, so is my room, so how about I move you in with Hort?"
"You wouldn't dare!"
"Wonder what he sleeps in since you stole his frog pajamas."
Sophie threw a pillow at her. It missed.
"Look, he said he knows about me from our fairy tale and hasn't been able to stop thinking about me,"
Sophie boasted, tightening her ponytail.
"He came to protect me."
"And that's all?" said Agatha. Sophie hesitated.
"Maybe Beatrix has room in her bed," said Agatha. "And they call me the witch," Sophie retorted. "He also said he's a humble servant of Camelot come to protect its king and his princess, and that he would fight until his dying breath to make sure the rightful king weds his rightful queen. Happy?"
Agatha stared at her.
"He said that?"
Sophie picked at a loose thread in her caftan.
"He wants to be Lancelot to Tedros's Arthur. He wants to see you and Teddy married. That's why he really came to save us, okay? Because of you and Teddy. Everything is always about you and Teddy. I'm just the girl he has a crush on at the moment."
Sophie balled her knees to her chest.
"There could be 1,000 other girls like me for all I know, Aggie. 1,000 other roses in 1,000 other kingdoms. One for his every good deed."
Agatha could see the anxious pink spots on Sophie's cheeks, the way she was curling into herself like she used to their first year at school, whenever Sophie talked about her future prince.
"You really like him, don't you?"
Agatha said, surprised.
Sophie sighed. "I'm completely happy on my own. I don't need a boy, so don't make it sound like I do. Nor do I believe in love at first sight anymore, or even true love, for that matter. Not after Teddy and Rafal taught me that loving any boy only leads to them disappointing you once you realize they're boring or immature or an axe murderer. But this boy came out of nowhere, when I least expected it. And even though he didn't say we'd meet again, I keep thinking about how nice it'd be to have a proper date, where he picks me up, and I wear my furs and boots, and we dine on coq au vin, so I can ask what his father does for a living and what he does when he's not saving people. And why he liked me in our fairy tale when I behaved quite badly most of the time, but,"
she sank into the pillows,
"I can't really like him. I don't even know his name."
"Rian," said Agatha. Sophie bolted back up.
"What?"
"His name is Rian." Agatha drew Sophie's vial from her pocket and deployed the quest map. Sophie followed Agatha's fingertip to the lion-masked figurine riding towards Nottingham. Sophie turned sickly pale.
"That can't be his name."
"So you have heard it," said Agatha, eyes flaring.
"Professor Seder mentioned that name once,
Sophie said quickly. Rian was the name of Rafal's twin brother.
The schoolmaster's brother. The good one, said Agatha. He's alive, Sophie said.
The two girls gaped at each other.
Impossible, said Agatha.
We saw the good schoolmaster's ghost take over Professor Seder's body our first year. They both were destroyed, Professor Seder and Rian, forever.
Unless Rian's ghost came back somehow and took a younger form, said Sophie, like Rafal.
But Rian can't come back, just like Rafal can't come back, said Agatha, shaking her head. Not even the strongest magic could do that.
So maybe this Rian is the good schoolmaster's son. Dads name their sons after them, don't they? Narcissistic ones, at least.
His son. If the good schoolmaster had a son, don't you think we would have known about it before now? Wouldn't he have helped us fight Rafal?
Sophie shook her head.
So it's just a coincidence?
Must be, said Agatha skeptically.
Igraine landing! Nottingham ahead!
Nicola's voice echoed above. Hurry! Rian and Tedros are meeting soon. We need to find Tedros, said Agatha, yanking Sophie off the bed.
And I need to find out who this Rian is that's going around kissing girls and not writing them the next day.
Sophie puffed.
After we help Tedros, Agatha growled.
The Igraine hit land with an earth-shaking crash. Agatha seized Sophie in her arms, hugging her tight as debris and clothes and shoes showered over them, and the ship tremored until, at last, the room went quiet and still again. They could hear the commands and bootsteps of crew preparing to disembark.
Come on, said Agatha, pulling Sophie towards the door. Aggie?
Agatha turned.
Maybe it'll all work out. You with Teddy, me with Rian, whoever he is. Our own versions of Arthur and Lancelot, with Camelot great again.
Sophie breathed hopefully.
What if that's our ever after? What if that's our perfect ending?
Well, for one thing, Arthur and Lancelot finished with Lance betraying Arthur and Arthur wanting him dead, said Agatha, dragging Sophie behind her.
And if there's one thing I know, Sophie, it's that you and I don't get to have perfect endings.
Chapter 23. The Coven. The Sheriff's Daughter. When it came time to land, the Igraine didn't have a port to dock in, and its captain was below deck, so the ship made its own decision and thumped down in front of Nottingham Prison, crushing a statue of a fat, bearded sheriff beneath its hull. A few pigeons scattered. No sounds came from the jail.
Daddy won't be happy, Dot said, blinking over the rail.
Hester took in the deserted scene.
Where is everyone? You'd think flying ships land here every day.
Jail's pretty empty, Dot explained. Daddy and his men are so focused looking for Robin Hood that anyone else they put in there usually escapes.
Good sheriff,
said Annadil, her rats snickering.
He's caught Robin before. He'll catch him again, Dot defended. When he caught Robin, Dad was so happy. He told me I was pretty, bought me cakes and dresses, and didn't have a care in the world. But then when Robin escaped...
Her eyes clouded over.
But how? Did Robin escape?
Annadil pushed.
Oh, look! Bertie!
Dot said, waving over the rail.
Hi, Bertie!
She beamed down at a filthy old man who'd rushed out the door of the jail to check on the commotion. He had no shirt, his pants were falling down, and he was sucking on a lit cigar.
Any Robin sightings lately?
Dot asked cheerily. The old man cursed at her and went back inside. Dot smiled.
He's such a good friend.
A few minutes later, the crew gathered before their captain on sandy dirt, the Igraine in shadow behind them. A soft rain fell, the cloudy glow over Nottingham draining fast. Still, they could see downhill to the quiet village below, bounded on the north side by the rich greenery of Sherwood Forest.
Tedros and Lancelot are heading towards Sherwood Forest to meet the lion, said Agatha. According to the quest map, Tedros will soon reach Nottingham on his way there. But skims were spotted here in Nottingham last night. Surely it's because the snake sees a chance to attack Tedros before he gets to Sherwood Forest, where the snake can't follow him inside. Sophie and I will use the quest map to find Tedros before the snake does.
And the lion,
Sophie chimed in,
we'll look for him too.
Agatha glared at her. Sophie pursed her lips. The rest of you search Nottingham for skims, Agatha continued. If the sheriff spotted those eels last night, that means the snake is here somewhere. If you find him, cast your glow into the sky as a signal. Don't try to fight him on your own. Agatha scanned the group. Understood? The questers dispersed. Ruvin's team went with Vex's to explore the hill around the jail. Beatrix, Rena, and Kiko teamed up to search the area bordering Sherwood Forest. Bogdan and Willem took the Nottingham School, Hort and Nicola headed towards the outer cottages, and Hester and Annadil followed Dot into the centre of town.
Daddy will know where the skims were. We have to get to my house, said Dot, as they passed a billboard with a flattering painting of the beefy sheriff chasing an ogreish-looking Robin Hood, about to snare him in a big grey sack. The sign read, Welcome to Nottingham, land of law and order.
Can't wait for you to meet Daddy. I've told him all about you. Since when are you so chipper about Daddy?
Annadil scorned.
The way you talk about him, calling you a failure and a loser. He sounds like a demeaning, belittling mope. And that's coming from me.
Well, he appreciates me more now, said Dot cryptically.
Hester tuned out whenever Dot talked about her dysfunctional relationship with her father. She had no patience for parental issues, which she thought most kids used as an excuse for mediocrity and avoiding real responsibility. Instead, she was unnerved by how dead this town was, as she took in the square's empty streets, stagnant fountain, and closed shop fronts.
Sorry this isn't Ravenswood or Bloodbrook, with birdbone temples and man-wolf raves, Dot said, seeing her face. It's Robin's fault, to be honest. Robbed all the rich people to give to the poor, so the rich people left. But then the poor got rich from all Robin's stealing, so then he started robbing from them, and they left too. So the only people here are neither rich nor poor, and there ain't too many of those in this world. So yeah, it's a sleepy town.
This isn't sleepy, this is zombie, said Hester. No thugs running around wreaking havoc either, said Annadil. If the snake's here, where are the attacks?
A spooked villager rushed towards them, carrying an axe.
"Get inside, you fools! Eely things flying around all last night. They're hunting for someone,"
he spat, blowing past them.
"If you're idling about, they might come back."
The witches watched him flurry towards the cottage lanes. Hester frowned.
"At least we know why the streets are empty."
"Hold on. Last night? Dot's father said the Skims were looking for someone last night too,"
Annadil pointed out.
"Last night. Long before Tedros even left his castle. So the snake can't have been looking for Tedros. He must be looking for someone else in Nottingham."
"Someone he wants to kill,"
said Hester.
"Or it could be someone he needs,"
said Annadil.
"Someone he needs in order to take Camelot."
Hester mulled.
"You're so overestimating this town," Dot quipped.
Annadil's eyes roamed the clear sky.
"Well, we've been here a while and haven't seen a thing. So either the Skims gave up, or they found who they're looking for."
Hester noticed the news and sundries shop they were passing, the sheriff's blotter, covered in wanted posters of Robin Hood, which had a cartoon of an executioner chopping off his head. In the window, Hester glimpsed the latest edition of the Royal Rot.
"Banished from Camelot? Lady Gremlane spotted in hometown of Nottingham."
"Isn't that Agatha's steward?"
Hester thought. "The one she'd complained about." It was suspicious that she'd be back in Nottingham just when Camelot needed her most. But then again, the Royal Rot claimed that Agatha and Sophie were secretly sisters, which was the most preposterous thing Hester had ever heard. Still, she'd ask Agatha about Gremlane just in case. But now, Hester was distracted by the row of local Nottingham newspapers next to the Rot.
4-point report. Sheriff of Nottingham says daughter was the true lion.
Dot the hero. Read her exclusive. Letter to daddy inside.
I'm so proud of my daughter, sheriff boasts.
Dot, honey,
Hester said.
In your letter, what did you tell your dad about the 4-point?
Hester asked sweetly.
You know, that we won,
Dot said, eating a chocolate wanted poster.
We should hurry, it's getting dark.
More wanted posters of Robin Hood decorated the shuttered shop fronts. Sheriff's Coffee, a cozy cafe selling drinks like Frothy Marion and the Sheriff's Special Blend. The Headless Robin, a souvenir shop selling Sheriff and Robin masks and fake Sheriff badges, plus replicas of the famous grey sack the Sheriff had used to catch Robin and parade him through town. Books and badges, with books about Robin and the Sheriff prominently displayed in the window. And one about Dot, Hester realized, peering closer. The Sheriff's Daughter, Dot, Robin, and the Wood's Most Famous Escape. Hester narrowed her eyes.
Dot? What happened exactly between you and Robin Hood?
You're full of questions today, aren't you?
Dot snapped, swiveling.
Watch out!
Annadil yelped. Hester and Dot whirled to see a Skim whiz over their heads. In a flash, the three witches took off after it, hightailing down the street and around the corner to follow it. They crashed right into Sophie and Agatha, the five of them toppling to the ground. By the time they found their feet, the skim was gone.
"Where'd it go?"
Hester asked, breathless. "You saw it too?"